Shift was busy enough to keep it from being boring, but I was glad to leave when it was over. Lightning flashed through the dark clouds of the late afternoon sky as I slipped out the back exit of the morgue, and I felt a bit of relief that the rain had taken a break for the moment. I started toward my car, then almost had a heart attack as a figure moved from around the corner of the building.
"Angel?"
the figure said, and it took me a couple of heart-pounding seconds to recognize the speaker.
"Jesus Christ, Ed?"
He moved closer.
"Yeah, sorry," he said. "Didn't mean to scare you."
"That's cool," I said, taking a deep breath to get my pulse under control. "I know you can't exactly saunter up to the front door in broad daylight." Ed was wanted for multiple murders. Yeah, he'd killed those people, all zombies. But he'd been played and manipulated pretty heavily by the ruthless Dr. Christy Cherish. She'd convinced him that the zombie menace needed to be eradicated, and that killing known zombies would be a good and noble thing to do. It didn't help that he'd seen a zombie kill his dad about a decade earlier, which Cherish knew all about and gleefully exploited. The truly tragic part was that she only manipulated Ed into becoming a serial killer because she wanted zombie heads for her own screwed-up research. Bitch. I peered at him. When I first met Ed Quinn, he looked like the typical boy next door, tall and slender, reddish-brown hair, scattering of freckles across his nose. After he went on the run, he went goth as a disguise, dyed his hair black and spiked it, sported a variety of piercings, and dressed in skull-adorned clothing. Now he looked ordinary. Dark brown hair in a conservative and boring style, khaki pants, dark blue polo-style shirt. Even the freckles were gone, either bleached away or hidden beneath a layer of makeup. I wouldn't look at him twice, which was probably the point, I realized.
"How are you doing?" I asked.
"I'm okay. I mean, as okay as I can be while being hunted as a serial killer."
I winced in sympathy. "I guess no one's come up with some brilliant way to get you cleared of all that yet, huh?" Ed exhaled, shook his head.
"Nope. Never will be cleared legally,"
he said, regret tinging his voice.
"Maybe a little redemption if the heads can be restored."
"Yeah, that would be great. For your peace of mind and for them." After the fiasco with Dr. Cherish, I'd insisted that Pietro recover the zombie heads from her lab with the hope that the bodies could someday be regrown. Dr. Cherish had done it once, though not with complete success. But I hadn't heard squat about the heads in the past 6 months. I made a mental note to check on that soon. Ed gave me a resigned shrug, and I could tell guilt ate at him.
"Thankfully, Pietro has kept me well hidden from the law."
"But you can't stay hidden forever," I pointed out. To my surprise, a slight smile touched his mouth.
"Actually, I can," he said. "Not here, though. I'm leaving the country tonight. Pietro's got me set up in Costa Rica. New identity, fake passport, and everything."
"Oh. Wow." A sharp pang of loss went through me. I definitely considered Ed a friend. Sure, he'd tried really hard to kill me, but then he made up for it by helping me out when I was kidnapped by Dr. Cherish.
"Costa Rica, huh?"
I fought for a smile and struggled to be happy for him. It really was the only option that made sense, and Pietro certainly had the resources to make it happen.
"That's awesome,"
I managed, then bit my lower lip, met his eyes.
"Will you ever come back? I mean, will I ever see you again?"
"I don't know," he said, expression suddenly bleak. "Pietro and I talked about it. I'm going to have some plastic surgery."
He grimaced, rubbed his eyes.
"I think I need some time away to get my head together. It's been nothing but stress and confusion for a long time."
"Yeah, it's been pretty weird," I agreed, then sighed. "I'm gonna miss you. I mean, I know I've barely seen you these past few months, but I've always known that I could see you. And now you're going so far away."
"I'll miss you too,"
Ed said. That's why I wanted to come say goodbye. I was really hoping you'd come out before I had to go. A warm, fuzzy feeling went through me that he'd waited here. Thanks, I said. I'm really glad you came by. Maybe you can write. I mean, using your new name and all. I frowned. What is your new name? He chuckled. James Clement. And no, I'm not used to it. James, I laughed. Yeah, that's weird. You don't seem like a James. I know, but I can't complain. He said, shrugging. Pietro really came through for me. I made a sour face. Well, he kind of owed you big time. Pietro had been the zombie who'd killed Ed's father. Of course, that was right after Ed's father had killed Ed's mother because Pietro was sleeping with her. Yeah, major zombie soap opera stuff. He does owe me, Ed agreed. But owing and paying are two different things. I'm glad he didn't take the easy road and get rid of me. Oh, shit, I breathed, shocked at the idea. I never even thought of that. Yikes. A shudder ran through me. Damn. Yeah, I guess that would have been a lot easier. Says something about Pietro, I suppose. Exactly. He gave me a smile. Give me a hug. I've got to get out of here or I'll miss my flight. I wrapped my arms around him, hugged him tightly while I tried not to cry and failed miserably at that. You be careful, I sniffled. And you'd better write. I want postcards, damn it. Ed gave me a squeeze and kissed my cheek. Don't worry, sweetie. You can't get rid of me. I finally released him and wiped at my eyes. You'd better go. Yep. And I'm going to be sweating bullets until I get through airport security, he said. I've been assured that I don't need to worry, but damn. He flashed a grin. If you get caught, I'll bust you out, I promised, echoing his grin. He laughed. Deal. But let's not think about that. He kissed my cheek again. Gotta run. Take care, Angel. Always, I replied softly, as he turned and hurried to a waiting car. Was it possible to be happy and sad for someone at the same time? With a sigh, I headed for my car. Happy and sad, but mostly sad. Chapter 4. I raced home, showered and changed, even spent about 20 minutes on my hair and makeup, and was mostly pleased with the result. I also made sure to chug down half a smoothie to give that extra glow of, yes, I'm really alive, to my skin. Nothing like gray and rotting flesh to kill a great look. I'd hit the thrift store before my tutoring date with Nick and totally struck gold in my quest for a properly stylish and dressy outfit to wear to the gourmet gala that wouldn't break my pathetic budget. It helped that I was a pro at finding cool stuff for next to nothing. For about $30, I walked out with a cream silk blouse, black dress slacks, and a really striking thigh-length jacket in a dark red velvet. And as rainy as it was, I intended to wear my black boots, and to hell with whether they were appropriate for the event. They had low heels, and so would hopefully be dressy enough. My dad was in his usual spot in front of the TV when I came out to the living room. I plopped down on the other end of the couch and pulled my boots on. His gaze stayed on whatever show he was watching without even the barest acknowledgement of my presence. He had his feet propped up on the coffee table, a position he claimed took the pressure off an old back injury he'd sustained a decade ago on an offshore oil rig. Years of hard drinking and smoking had left him looking way older than his actual age of 48. Even though he'd made an effort to clean up his act in the past few months, it couldn't erase the haggard look and sagging jowls that had been long in the making. His light brown eyes were clearer, though, and these days he kept his face clean-shaven most of the time, a big change from the scraggly beard he used to keep so he didn't have to bother shaving. "Have you eaten yet?" I asked. "If you'd be home sometimes, you'd know." He finally looked over at me, eyes narrowing at the sight of me all dressed up. "Where the hell you going now?" Scowling, I zipped up my boots. "I spend pretty much every night here, Dad. You don't see me, 'cause you're not here in the evenings." I gave him a hard look. cocked an eyebrow at him. What, are you out feeding the poor or something noble like that?
What's that supposed to mean?
He demanded.
I can damn well be out if I want to be out.
I stood and pulled on my jacket, reveling in the way it flared out and swirled as I moved. I loved that jacket. Loved the way it felt, loved everything about it.
You know what I mean.
You making the rounds of the bars again?
His expression darkened.
Well, what if I am?
My mouth tightened. Yeah, what if you are? I sighed, shook my head. Whatever. I'm going out with Marcus tonight. He got tickets to the gourmet gala.
Well, that's some shit, he said with a small sneer. Act like you're all worried about whether or not I've eaten anything, and then go off with that asshole to stuff your face and leave me here to fend for myself.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Dad. You know what? I won't ever ask how you're doing again. I stomped out of the house and slammed the door behind me, only to hit the steps and realize I'd forgotten my purse. Scowl deepening, I slammed back into the house, grabbed my purse, and then once again stomped out and closed the door hard. Didn't help my mood that I thought I heard my dad give a snort of laughter.
Yeah, so much for a dramatic exit.
Plus Marcus wasn't even there yet. But I wasn't about to go back inside to wait. Fortunately, for my own state of mind, it was only a few minutes before he pulled up. I dashed through the rain to the truck and climbed in as quickly as I could.
You look great, hon,
Marcus said with an appreciative smile as soon as I had the door closed. He leaned over and gave me a kiss. Thanks. Ugh, I said, returning the kiss. Sorry, the ugh wasn't for you. Let's get out of here. Dad's being a pain again.
Uh-oh,
he said as he pulled out onto the road.
I was wondering why you were huddled on the porch. I didn't think I was running that late.
He slanted a glance my way.
What's he doing now?
I heaved a sigh. The usual. Defensive bullshit. Pissed that I'm with you. Winery and bitchery. Same old, same old.
Crap, he replied, grimacing. I thought he'd gotten better.
I thought he had, too. I controlled the urge to rub my eyes and smear my makeup all over my face. At least I'd remembered to use waterproof mascara and eyeliner since it was raining and so damn humid.
I don't know what the deal is, I continued.
There's no beer or booze at the house, so I figure he's drinking somewhere else. He knows I'll go ballistic if I find any at home.
Sounds like you've at least put the fear of Angel into him,
he said with a low chuckle.
That's a start.
I gave a bark of laughter. Yeah, there is that. And it was true. Last year he'd given me some real bullshit, and I'd used zombie strength to pin him against the wall. He didn't have a clue I was a zombie, but he sure as hell knew he couldn't mess with me like that anymore. I peered out the window. When is this damn rain supposed to stop?
Never, Marcus made a pained face. The forecast says it's supposed to be hard rain like this for at least the next 4 to 5 days. And this past winter was wet as hell, which means we're primed for flooding in all the low-lying areas.
He looked over at me, worry flickering in his eyes.
Like where you live.
We'll be fine, I reassured him. I mean, the worst we've ever had is some water across the road. Marcus nodded, clearly relieved. A wave of warmth went through me at the concern. Damn it. He was nice, sexy, considerate, and we were great in bed together. Why the hell was I holding back? Still, 5 days of rain sucks ass, I said, yanking my thoughts away from my issues. There's not much worse than picking up a body in the rain.
You could get lucky, he said. Maybe no one will die, and there'll be no bodies to pick up for a couple of weeks.
I shook my head. Nope. Then Alan would convince the coroner to lay off staff, and I'd be the first to go. I made a sour face. He raised an eyebrow.
But you're the shining star of the coroner's office, remember?
Election's over, I reminded him. He can dump me at will. I think I only still have a job because Dr. LeBlanc sticks up for me.
At least you don't give them any real reason to fire you.
He paused, then chuckled.
I mean, any that they know of. Swapping brains would do it.
Swapping brains would get me committed if I ever got caught, I shot back, laughing. We made it to the fairgrounds and found parking that wasn't too far of a hike, Then Marcus and I huddled close beneath a compact umbrella, arms around each other as we headed to the entrance. The venue itself consisted of a half dozen or so long tents, spaced out on either side of a paved walkway. Each tent had about 15 tables around the perimeter, each table belonging to a local restaurant, eager to hand out small samples of their cuisine. The rain had slacked off to a drizzle, yet I still saw quite a few elegantly dressed couples pop open umbrellas to walk the 10 feet or so between tents. Maybe it was a bitch to get watermarks out of silk. I sure as hell wouldn't know. As we made our way through the tents, I amused myself with some people watching. No surprise, there were plenty of folks here who absolutely reeked of wealth. Quite a few trophy wives and even a scattering of trophy husbands. High-powered business types and a generous handful of politicians roamed the event, including the coroner, Dr. Duplessis, who I shamelessly avoided by ducking behind a thick-necked man who turned out to be a former Saints player. Last thing I needed was to annoy my boss by making him feel he had to stop meeting and greeting to be sociable with me. Marcus did his best to murmur names of people he recognized or point out who he thought I'd get a kick out of seeing in the flesh.
Carla Stanford,
he told me with a nod toward the C-level actress, well past her prime but still dressing like a 20-year-old, and not doing it well.
Jerome LaRue, he said,
subtly indicating the silver-haired and quite handsome man who owned the high-end LaRue jewelry. That surprised me. Rumor had it that he'd been a recluse since his partner, in more ways than business, had committed suicide last year for no known reason. He sat alone at a table, looking so forlorn I wished someone would go sit with him.
Nicole Saber,
Marcus said with a nod toward the CEO of Saberton Corporation and daughter of its founder, Richard Saber. A tall woman with honey blonde hair pulled back in an elegant twist, she wore an elegant black pantsuit that managed to be sensible and sexy at the same time. She sipped her wine and idly twisted a stray lock of hair around her index finger, over and over as she conversed and laughed with table mates, all the while watching the proceedings with a keen eye.
And that's her son, Andrew Saber,
Marcus added. He didn't gesture or point, but I had no trouble picking out who Marcus meant. Andrew Saber was a good-looking man in his late 20s or so, tall and broad-shouldered, with the same honey-blonde hair, bright blue eyes, and regal profile as his mother. He stood near her table, faint smile touching his mouth as he idly scanned the area and pretended interest in the eager conversation of a forgettable man beside him. Yeah, we did some people watching, but mostly we ate.
I do so love free food,
Marcus said. He took a bite of an oyster something and let out a small moan.
And good free food is even better.
Oh my God, I said with a weak laugh. I should have paced myself better. There's still 3 tenths to go, and I'm about to explode.
Now you know what I meant about the elastic waistband, he replied, grinning.
Yes, next time I'll wear my sweatpants with a designer jacket. We made our way through the crowd, then paused to get our bearings. One woman, a leggy brunette in a skin-tight sheath of a dress and impossible stiletto heels, gave me a startled look that slid to one of amusement. Her eyes met mine briefly before she pulled her gaze away. She leaned close to murmur something to the woman by her side, and a second later they both tittered, glancing at me again. I turned away, face heating, reminded a bit too much of high school and the way the popular girls pointed and laughed at my complete lack of anything that could fit in. Marcus, I murmured, is there something on my face or a sign stuck to my back? To his credit, he actually gave me a solid look over.
No, why?
Heels over there? The woman behind me in the red and black dress and stupid shoes keeps looking at me and laughing. I told him, trying very hard not to be as unsettled as I was.
Snobby bitches all over this place, babe, he said with a reassuring smile. And it doesn't even matter if you have money or whatever. Someone like that tries to put everyone down they can.
He gave me a squeeze.
You look great. She's probably jealous, and her feet have to be killing her, which makes her doubly bitchified.
I laughed. I never thought I'd hear doubly bitchified coming out of your mouth. Marcus grinned.
It seemed to fit the moment.
I smiled up at him. Thanks. I'm probably overreacting.
Don't sweat it.
He made a face.
Really have to have a thick skin around some of these people. I'm here for the food, and they're here for dirt and gossip.
I hate that crap, I muttered, then caught a glimpse of a familiar face through the crowd. Isn't that your uncle? I asked with a lift of my chin. Marcus's gaze followed mine.
I do believe it is. I wonder if he's as overstuffed as we are.
We should thank him for the tickets, I said, remembering my inconsistent manners. He eyed me.
Can you still walk?
Waddle, I replied. I can most certainly waddle. Marcus slipped an arm around my waist.
Waddle on, then.
Together, we wove through the crowd, murmuring apologies and excuse-me's as appropriate along the way. Pietro Ivanov looked over at us as we approached. He was slightly stocky with brown hair touched with gray and dark eyes that glinted with keen intelligence. For all outward appearances, he was a hale 60-something, but I'd seen his eyes go ancient once and had no doubt he was far, far older. I didn't know a damn thing about tailoring or suits, but Pietro looked really good in the dark gray one he wore, and it radiated expensive. Odd as hell, though, was the splint on his left wrist. Being a zombie with no shortage of brains, there was no way he should have an injury. Faking it? Had to be. But why? A smile crossed his face.
Angel, Marcus, I'm so glad you could use the tickets.
He gave Marcus's upper arm a squeeze, then offered me a polite kiss on the cheek, which I managed to accept without appearing as startled as I was. Thank you so much, I gushed, fully aware that I was gushing and not much caring. This is awesome. His smile widened.
You're more than welcome. Have you been here long?
About an hour, I replied. Long enough to get totally bloated.
Crap. Not the most cool thing to say, I fought back a wince.
Not me,
Marcus stated with a smile.
I've barely touched a thing.
Pietro gave a low chuckle.
I don't believe that for a second.
He shook his head.
I've been busier than usual this time with little chance to eat yet.
He tilted his head at the two of us.
Do you have a minute? I need to get my date a drink, and then I'd like to introduce you both to her.
I assured him we had all the time in the world. He smiled and went off to the refreshments table, and I swept my gaze around the tent area. This one wasn't as crowded as the others, mostly because it held only tables and a couple of serving booths for drinks. People clustered around tables, plates of all sorts of food piled high before them, and filled the air with the hum of conversation and bursts of laughter. Marcus gave me a quick kiss.
I'm going to find the men's room while Uncle Pietro gets drinks. I'll be right back.
I'll be here, I told him. Or stuff in my face. Chuckling, he strode off through the crowd. I allowed my attention to drift across the paved path to the tent that held a booth we'd bypassed earlier, where wonderfully evil-looking bread pudding was served. I could probably stuff a few more pounds of food into my gut. Surely my parasite would keep me from exploding, right? After all, what the hell good was a zombie parasite if it couldn't help me drastically overeat every now and then? I felt someone come up behind me. I turned, surprised to see Heels leveling a smirk down at me.
Well, it looks like my jacket did make it into the Goodwill bag rather than the trash after all, she said in a smooth purr. Unless, of course, you dug it out of a dumpster.
She tilted her head, and I instantly hated how perfectly her hair flowed over her shoulder with the movement.
So which was it?
Are you fucking kidding me? I'd seen this kind of scenario in movies, but did this actually happen in real life? Excuse me? I managed. I didn't miss that the two women with her had smirks of their own as they eyed me. Perfect noses, perfect breasts, perfect bitches. Heels reached out and tweaked the collar of the jacket with a French manicured hand.
Simple question, she said. Goodwill or dumpster?
I eyed the bitch, then widened my eyes in mock comprehension.
Oh!
I made a show of sweeping my gaze over her.
Now it all makes sense. I was wondering why the pockets were stuffed with condoms.
I tilted my head in a mockery of her pose as her eyes narrowed. So, simple question. Were they yours, or did men give them to you to keep your skank under control? Her mouth tightened, then opened in a snarl, but before she could speak, I felt an arm tuck through mine. I flicked a glance over, expecting Marcus, and was briefly taken aback when I saw Pietro instead.
Ah, Jessica Laneburn, Pietro said with a pleasant smile. I haven't seen you since you tried to swim the Krieger River in nothing but your thong and had to be fished out by the sheriff's office boat patrol. He chuckled. That was priceless. Do you plan to amuse the crowd with something equally entertaining today?
Jessica's eyes went wide in horror. Without another word, she spun and fled as quickly as she could in those insane stilettos, her two cronies trailing after her, wearing similarly mortified expressions. I tried not to utterly wilt in relief as Pietro turned a look of amusement on me.
Even though you were doing a marvelous job of cutting that venomous bitch down to size, he said, I didn't think you'd mind some additional firepower.
I gave a weak laugh. Not at all. Thanks for the assist.
I call those tops piranha, he said. You're okay?
Absolutely, I assured him, though my next move would have been to slug her, which might not have gone over so well. Laughter flashed in his eyes.
Probably not. And then she would have been the poor victim of an attack, giving her even more drama to spew, he said. Not that I would have minded seeing you slug her, though, he added.
I grinned. At times, he wasn't so bad. Hey, Pietro, Marcus said he was going to tell you about what happened with Philip and me the other day at the movie set, but I forgot to ask him if he ever did.
Yes, he said with a nod. He did tell me, and I'm looking into it.
Nagging worry surfaced. But does that mean that Dr. Cherish might be around as well? What if she's up to more bullshit involving me?
Pietro's face grew serious and contemplative. Legitimate concerns, indeed, though she would be a fool to act against me again. My people are working on it, but you be sure to let me know if you have any more trouble whatsoever.
Okay, thanks, I said, relieved. It's not just me, I added. I mean, last time she messed with my dad, and that's way over the line.
She stepped over a lot of lines and burned all of her bridges, he agreed, a whisper of anger tightening his expression. Keep your eyes and ears open, and you'll be fine.
He gave me a genuinely reassuring smile, then lifted what looked like an iced tea in his other hand.
I need to take this to my date. Walk with me?
At my nod, he headed for the back of the tent, keeping his arm tucked through mine.
You and Marcus can sit with us for a few minutes and keep her piranhas at bay.
I shot him a questioning look. Your date has piranhas?
A different breed of piranha, perhaps, but still wanting a piece of her.
At my baffled look, he explained,
she's Dr. Jane Pennington, state senator, and recently elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. Way too many piranhas, though a little better now that the election is over.
Oh, wow, I said. Gulping, I swept a glance over myself. Was this jacket stylish or ridiculous? The fact that heels had owned it wasn't exactly a glowing recommendation in my eyes. Who the hell do I think I am pretending to fit in with important, influential people? Yet even as I thought it, Nick's face came to mind as though he'd heard the negative self-talk and was prepared to give me a heap of shit for thinking so little of myself. Get over it, Nick, I thought with a stifled snort of amusement. You're not the one playing Goodwill Girl meets Congresswoman. Oblivious to my inner angst, Pietro steered me to a table where a slim, dark-haired woman sat, 30-ish or so, and looking perfectly at ease in a sleek navy blue skirt suit. Under the table, I noted the bulk of an air cast on her right leg and a cane leaning against her chair. Not a zombie, then, I realized. Not with unhealed injuries, unless she was faking it, too. Whatever the deal was, I had no doubt there was a connection between her possibly fake injuries and Pietro's definitely fake one.
Jane, Pietro said with a warmth in his voice that surprised me, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine, Angel Crawford. Angel, Dr. Jane Pennington.
My confidence increased as I managed to do the handshake and pleased to meet you thing without embarrassing myself.
And please call me Jane, she insisted with a smile. A moment later,
Marcus found us and was duly introduced as well. We all got seated, and I tried not to focus on how very out of my depth I was. Good grief. First name basis with a frickin' congresswoman? Me? What alternate universe had I slipped into? "And now, with a full table, I can have a few minutes of peace," Jane said with a chuckle. The drumming of the rain on the tent eased to a soft hiss of drizzle. Marcus laid his arm across the back of my chair in a gesture that felt just right, not too possessive and not too distant. For the next few minutes, the conversation shifted to topics that ranged from neutral to mildly amusing, nothing that required a great deal of thought or effort. A sharp increase in the buzz of the crowd drew our attention to the outside walkway. "What on earth?" Jane murmured. She straightened and peered in the direction of the increasing murmurs and laughter. I followed her gaze and drew in a sharp breath. 10 or so zombies shambled down the sidewalk between the tents, giving low moans of brains and reaching toward people at tables. I shot a quick look at Pietro, but he didn't seem the least bit concerned. If anything, he looked indulgently pleased. "Duh, they're the movie zombies," I realized with a wash of relief. What a perfect place to do some promo and fish for more investors. Everybody who was anybody was here. Money. Lots of money. "Oh, my God, Pietro," Jane breathed. "They look amazing." "New makeup people," he commented, eyes on the lurching actors. "You're an investor, Uncle Pietro?" Marcus asked. His uncle nodded. "One of several. Having the movie here is a nice boost to the local economy. In fact, the other investors are here tonight as well. J.M. Faroche, Francis Renald, and Nicole and Andrew Saber." He gave a nod toward the fake zombies. "I have no doubt this performance is partly to reassure us that our money is being well spent." Pietro's mouth twitched in amusement. As the hideous group made its way past, a zombie woman with half a face groaned, "Brains!" and lifted a shredded hand toward us. Another zombie with a bloody face and protruding guts lurched toward Nicole Saber, who took a half step back, an expression of genuine interest on her face. She peered closely at the extra as if assessing the realism and quality of her investment, then dismissed him with a laugh and wave of her hand. Beside her, Andrew Saber took a sip of his drink and looked on with utter disinterest. Marcus grinned, leaned close to me.
"Weird as hell, right?"
he murmured. I bit back a laugh. "Yes?" Marcus turned to Pietro.
"How many extras did they hire?"
"Close to 100,
he replied, still watching the zombies as they continued up the path to the cheers and applause of the crowd. "Yikes. Do they have to do makeup on all of them?" I asked.
"Well, yes, but the majority of them have very basic makeup since they'll be in crowds seen at a distance," Pietro explained. "Only a couple dozen or so will get the more detailed makeup like those."
He nodded toward the cluster of zombies as they drew out of sight.
"Those are the ones who'll get the close camera work."
Jane turned to Pietro, expression aglow with excitement and delight.
"You'll get me onto the set for filming, right?" she asked with a smile. "I'd love to see."
"I'll check with Vince and get you in on a good crowd scene," Pietro told her, smiling.
"Oh, it doesn't have to be anything big," she protested, though her eyes brightened at the thought. "I don't want to get in the way, and I certainly don't want to be on camera."
She let out a soft snort, then chuckled.
"I get enough of that now. I simply want to see how it's done."
Pietro smiled.
"Too bad you're a congresswoman-elect. You could get yourself made up."
Jane laughed. "Oh, my goodness, no. I love watching zombies and zombie movies, but I don't ever want to be one." "Okay, so not a zombie, which means her injuries are real," I thought, though carefully keeping my expression under control. But that still doesn't answer the question of whether or not she knows Pietro is a zombie. Marcus gave me a light squeeze.
"Hey, babe. Did you ever get the bread pudding you were lusting after?"
"I wasn't lusting." I stopped, then shrugged. "Okay, I was lusting. It smelled amazing. I would do terrible things to that pudding." I gave him a bright smile. "You offering to go get some for me?" Jane raised an eyebrow.
"Lust-worthy bread pudding?"
Pietro chuckled.
Come, Marcus. The ladies want bread pudding, and we should oblige them.
It wasn't until the two went off together that I realized I'd been left alone to talk to a congresswoman. Okay, I can do this. Now, try not to say anything stupid. Easy, right?
So, you and Pietro, I said. You known him long?
A few months now, she replied, a flicker of something I couldn't identify passing quickly over her face. I met him at a fundraiser.
I only met him about 6 months ago or so, I said,
then couldn't think of a damn thing to follow up that with. An awkward silence threatened, but Jane saved me.
I absolutely love your jacket, she said with an appreciative smile. The color is gorgeous on you, and it's a terrific style.
Thanks, I replied, then added, I actually picked it up for $15 at Goodwill. Somehow I had the feeling it wouldn't matter to her where I got it, and there was also a small part of me that wanted to establish that I wasn't a snob like Heels. She didn't disappoint me. Her face lit up in honest appreciation of the find.
What luck!
I'm a pro at finding the good bargains, I said with a laugh, but then I sobered. At the risk of being rude and nosy, what happened to your leg? She sucked in a breath with a hiss and shook her head as though it was an ugly memory.
Pietro and I were in a serious car accident a couple of weeks ago. I've been told I'm lucky to be alive.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that, I said, then hunched my shoulders. I mean, not sorry that you're alive. Sorry you had the accident. I groaned.
Geez, someone needs to shoot me right about now.
But Jane merely gave a nice laugh.
It's all right. I know what you meant. And I still don't know how Pietro managed to get out with only minor injuries. Moreover, his driver was completely unscathed.
She shook her head in amazement.
A real miracle.
A miracle, I echoed. She doesn't know we're zombies, and Pietro's pretending to have an injury. What the heck was he up to? Was he trying to get a congresswoman in his pocket? It certainly wasn't out of the realm of possibility, especially for Pietro. And maybe their relationship had started out that way, but judging by the way he looked at this woman and how his voice seemed to deepen on her name, it was pretty clear he was crazy about her now.
Pietro told me that you and Marcus are an item,
Jane said with a slightly questioning tone, as if wanting to be sure of our status before continuing. We're dating, I said, hedging on the whole item thing. Was just dating an item? Or did we have to actually be boyfriend and girlfriend? And if Marcus and I were dating each other exclusively, were we actually boyfriend and girlfriend no matter how hard I tried to deny it? Was I overthinking the hell out of this?
He's a great guy, I finished gamely.
Hard to find those, she said.
Her gaze drifted in the direction the two men had gone before it returned to me.
Are you from this area?
Lived here my whole life, I admitted.
Never been further away than Talladega, Alabama, actually, I added.
Anywhere you've ever dreamed of going?
Oh, wow, I said, exhaling.
Everywhere, anywhere. New York, L.A., D.C.
God, I'd fucking love to see the Smithsonian. I winced. Yes, I just dropped an F-bomb on a congresswoman.
Sorry, I mean, I'd love to see it.
The woman leaned forward.
Don't tell the press, she said quietly, then cast a furtive glance around. But I've been known to say fuck a time or two.
I grinned weakly.
Be pretty boring if you could never cuss, I guess.
Jane laughed.
I don't think I'd make it through my day.
What's it like being in Congress? I asked.
Well, I don't actually know yet,
she answered with a kind smile. I was elected in a special election, but I won't be sworn in until next week. It's a dream come true, so I'm banking on it not being a nightmare.
Yeah, I guess that would kind of suck if it was miserable, I said, wrinkling my nose. But that's still pretty damn cool that you got to reach your dream.
Some emotion briefly darkened her eyes, but was gone before I could get a sense of what it was.
Yes, it's very damn cool, she said, smiling. Do you have a dream, Angel?
I frowned.
I don't know.
I looked around at the soiree surrounding us. In a way,
Simply being right here is a dream come true. I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that I was a real mess. Didn't care what happened to me. I took a deep breath. These days, I try to take it one step at a time. Right now, I'm trying to pass the GED. After that, I shrugged. Don't really know. But whatever it is, I intend to kick its ass.
That's a good start, she replied.
If she was surprised or put off by the fact I hadn't finished high school, she hit it well.
It takes a lot of determination to do something like that, she continued.
I was more than a little pleased that she wasn't doing the pity or disdain thing at all. I definitely saw why Pietro was so gaga over her, or rather, as gaga as a man like Pietro could be. I don't know about determination, I said with a shrug. I want something better for me and my dad. I gestured at the gala around us. The only reason I'm here is because Pietro gave me and Marcus tickets. And don't get me wrong, it's awesome that he did that for us. But I'd love to someday be able to do something like this and not have to think, oh, wait, if I buy these tickets, then I can't pay the light bill or the water bill.
It seems like you're on the right track, she said. You said your life was a mess not long ago, but you certainly don't show it now.
She smiled.
Are you working?
I work at the coroner's office, I told her, then grinned. I wrangle dead bodies. Jane laughed and made the typical that's kind of gross face I was accustomed to.
I'm sorry I asked. Do you like it?
You know, it's actually really interesting, I replied, then paused.
It, gives you a lot of perspective, that's for sure.
She tilted her head, eyes on mine.
How so?
I met her gaze easily.
For a congresswoman, she was really easy to talk to.
Well, you get to see that lots of times people don't get a chance to say goodbye. Shit can happen out of nowhere, and then you're gone. I shrugged and spread my hand. And, well, it doesn't matter how rich or powerful you are, you're still gonna die eventually. Her expression grew sober in thought, and I grimaced.
Sorry, I'm being a major downer here, I said.
She chuckled.
Not at all, I...
She turned at a sudden commotion in the tent near the walkway. The sight of another zombie actor stumbling through the tent triggered an odd, oh shit, something's wrong feeling in my gut. He'd been with the group earlier. I remembered his filthy sky blue polyester suit. As I watched, he staggered drunkenly between the tables and yelled an incomprehensible word a couple of times that sure as hell wasn't brains. Some people drew back in alarm, but based on the grins and chatter of the crowd, it was clear that the majority thought it was part of the movie promo. Jane winced as the zombie grabbed at a patron's plate, snagging a chunk of cake and stuffing it in his mouth.
Oh dear, that's a bit much, isn't it?
No kidding, I murmured as the oh shit feeling grew. And then the breeze shifted. If I hadn't been fairly well tanked up, I might not have noticed it. But right now, there was no mistaking the very faint stench of zombie rot. Alarm shot through me.
That's a real zombie.
I quickly swept my gaze around, but Marcus and Pietro were nowhere to be seen. Something needed to be done before this zombie started smashing heads. Something needed to be done. By someone. Shit. Why did I have the feeling that someone was going to be me? Chapter 5. I quickly dug the bag of brain chips out of my purse and stuffed them into my jacket pocket, then did my best to put on an exasperated expression. Well, hell, he must be drunk or something, and everybody's frickin' watching him, I said. I'm gonna try to get him the hell away from the crowd and see what's wrong with him. Jane shot me a startled look, and I suddenly realized how ludicrous it no doubt seemed to her that I, all barely 100 pounds of me, was planning on confronting what she assumed to be a rowdy drunk.
Angel, are you mad? We should wait for Pietro and Marcus. You could get hurt.
I won't get too close, I hurried to reassure her, though she didn't look at all reassured. They aren't far, right? Just call Pietro and tell him what's going on. And with that, I stood and headed off through the crowd before she could make any more extremely sensible protests. Being skinny had its advantages when it came to slipping through a crowd. I ducked between a couple of gawkers and came face to face with the zombie. Close up, I smelled the undertone of rot better, but his appearance confused the hell out of me. Movie makeup and chocolate cake. A gruesome fake eye hung out of its prosthetic socket on one side of his face, but latex gaped on the other where he'd clawed at it, exposing the real gray peeling skin beneath. This was a hungry, real zombie, made up as an extra, but he sure wasn't acting right. I'd been starving more than once, and there was no way I would have confused cake with what I really needed. I yanked the bag of brain chips out of my pocket and opened it. Hey! I waved the tasty morsels in front of him, hoping the scent of the brains would get through to his zombiness. Here, zombie. In my peripheral vision, I saw the crowd had stopped and was watching me. Great. They probably thought I was part of the stunt now. The zombie swung toward me, his one clear eye focused on the bag.
Brains,
he rasped, and reached clumsily for the bag. I pulled it out of his reach and backed away from the crowd toward the exit. He followed to the sound of scattered applause. I figured if I could get him outside, there'd be less chance he would hurt someone, plus more room to take him down if it came to that once Marcus showed up. He staggered toward me and grabbed for the bag again, but I easily dodged.
Brains,
he bellowed as I backed away. Light rain spattered me as we left the shelter of the tent, but I didn't stop. We weren't far enough from the people yet, people who applauded and cheered their rescue from the zombie.
Give me a break.
Here! I pulled a few chips from the bag and dropped them onto the sidewalk. I felt a little bad making him eat off the ground, but I didn't want to get close enough for him to grab hold of me. He didn't seem to mind, though. He crouched, snatched them up, and stuffed them into his mouth, then lurched toward me again.
More brains.
He picked up a bit of speed, a side effect of getting some brains into him. Even at half strength, the chips would be like the nectar of the gods for a hungry zombie. I moved away more quickly as he shuffled toward me and continued to drop chips, leading him like a cat with tuna. The rain began to pick up again, but I wasn't about to stop now that I had his attention. We'd made it about 100 yards from the tents when he abruptly swiveled his head to the right, head lifting as if he scented something. I shot a quick glance that way, and cold knifed through me at the side of a bus stop and a woman waiting there. The zombie took a staggering step in that direction, a tortured moan coming from his throat as if he was fighting an inner battle to keep from going after the woman. I knew what that battle was like. I'd been hungry before, ready to club down the first person with a non-zombified brain to cross my path. No! I waved the bag at him. This way! Come on! Don't go over there! I'll get you more brains, I promise! He stopped in the glow of the street lamp, swaying as he looked back at me. His lips curled back in a snarl, but I got the sense it was more pain and confusion than menace. Here, I said, making a quick decision. Have the rest of these. I held the bag out, hoping that there was enough brain power in them to counter his desire for fresh brains. The zombie looked to the bus shelter, then back to me. His breath rasped as he turned and made a sluggish grope for the bag. I let it drop to the sidewalk, but to my shock, he ignored the bag and made a lightning-fast grab of my wrist. Shit. I sucked in a gasp. He was way stronger than I expected a zombie that shambly to be. A menacing growl shuddered from him as his lips twisted back in a wicked, tooth-bearing snarl.
Angel.
The word, my frickin' name, came out in an ugly, wet croak. What the hell? The initial shock of getting grabbed melted into get the fuck away from me. I made a strong twist of my arm in an attempt to free it and landed a solid kick in the bastard's zombie balls. To my dismay, he only grunted and snarled with the impact, then clamped harder on my wrist with bone-breaking strength. Excruciating pain shot up my arm while his other hand swung low and wide, arcing from my throat. Okay, I'm in deep, deep shit. Yeah, I was a little slow getting a clue, but with that extra jolt of fear, I turned into a punching, struggling, kicking, psycho, redneck zombie bitch. Bad zombie clamped his free hand on my shoulder and lunged in for a bite. I threw myself backwards enough to shake the shoulder hold and avoid anything to do with teeth.
A sickening wave of zombie-rot stench struck me, and his grip on my wrist slipped as skin sloughed from his fingers. This was not good on a whole bunch of levels. No way should he be rotting this fast, and now I had zombie ooze on my jacket on top of everything else. "Let go," I snarled. I made a savage punch at the arm that held me, heart pounding from the desperate cocktail of anger and fear. With the force of the blow, flesh slid from his fingers and my wrist slipped free. But I didn't even get a fraction of a second to celebrate that victory as his other hand knotted into the sleeve of my jacket and yanked my arm up to his open mouth. I let out a yelp of pain and dismay as he bit down hard on my forearm. "You fucker!" I shouted and punched his eye. Well, I punched where his eye was under the dangling eyeball prosthetic. To my total surprise, he let out a near airless moan and let go, latex dangling from his face and his real eyelid and upper cheek knocked away. I wanted to allow myself a brief moment of self-congratulation at my badassery, but the abrupt release of my arm sent me staggering backward, and I barely managed to keep my footing. Plus, now another zombie dude loomed a couple of yards behind Bad Zombie. Time to get the hell out of here. I turned and ran and barreled straight into a wall. A wall that threw an arm around me and pinned me to it. Okay, not a wall, but another goddamn zombie pretending to be a zombie. Within half a second, Wall Zombie had my back to his chest and his arm locked hard around me. Shit. Bad Zombie shambled toward us with the unsavory declaration of, "Mine." Wall Zombie kept an unshakable hold on me and leveled a gun at the advancing zombie.
"Tim, no,"
he commanded in a low, raspy voice. It looked like Wall Zombie intended to shoot Bad Zombie, which meant he was a good zombie, but I didn't care. I went right back to struggling like a psycho. All I wanted was to get the hell away. "Let me go."
"Hold still,"
he ordered me through clenched teeth, then fired the gun, except it wasn't a normal gun, and it made a whoosh instead of a normal bang. His voice abruptly registered. I craned my head around in shock. "Oh my God," I breathed. Though I couldn't see his face under the makeup, I knew his eyes. "Philip." Bad Zombie staggered back with a sound between a growl and a sob. He pawed at a yellow tufted thing in his shoulder, and I realized Philip had shot him with a tranquilizer dart. Looming Zombie moved in close behind Bad Zombie, got a hand on his arm as he swayed. I didn't have a clue what was going on, but I knew it would be a lot better if I wasn't right in the middle of it. I ramped my crazy chick struggles up another notch, but Philip easily kept a solid hold on my scrawny ass. Even through my thrashing, I could feel his whole body tremoring against my back, as if he was shivering from cold or fear, but neither of those reasons made sense. Sure, we were all soaking wet from the rain, but it was the middle of summer. Something else was up.
"Roland, get him out of here now,"
Philip ordered. He produced what looked like a candy bar with a white wrapper and tossed it to Looming Zombie, who ripped it open and scarfed it down. The whole thing reminded me of a dog getting a treat. Bad Zombie collapsed on his back in the pool of light from the street lamp, thrashed for a moment before subsiding into twitches. Wrecked latex and makeup left what remained of his face exposed, and it only took me a second to recognize him. Square jaw, a nose that had been repeatedly broken. Horror, backed by anger, slammed through me. I'd carefully memorized the features of the men who'd been my jailers when I was Dr. Cherish's unwilling test subject. This guy was one of the assholes who had callously watched me get strip-searched. Which means that he's probably one of the two men who got turned into zombies by Philip right before I escaped Dr. Cherish's lab. My gaze snapped up to Looming Zombie, the one Philip called Roland, and met his eyes. Gorgeous blue. And that's probably the other one. One of Cherish's guards had eyes like that. The makeup couldn't hide those. Oh, this was all kinds of bad. Philip and his freaking zombie spawn. He'd been in bad shape when he'd made them. Mean, near berserk, and rotting too soon. Damaged by some experimental shit Cherish had done to him. Who the hell knew how screwed up the two he'd turned were?
I landed a hard kick to Philip's shin, but he seemed unfazed by my struggles. I got in a few more solid kicks and foot stomps, and then he tucked away the trank gun and pulled a knife. I made a strangled sound, pushed out by panic.
No, no, let me go, I managed. Oh, God.
It was hard as hell to kill a zombie, but I had no doubt he knew how to do it.
Shut up, Angel,
he said, his voice deep and hoarse. He wrestled my bitten arm up and sliced the jacket sleeve.
Have to make sure the goods aren't damaged.
A stupid pang of grief went through me, and I stared in horror at the long rent in the lovely fabric.
You cut my jacket!
Yeah, I was captured by a couple of evil zombies, but a girl has her priorities.
You fucking dick!
I slammed my boot heel down into the top of his foot.
Get off me!
Philip hissed and shifted.
God damn it, Angel. Let her go.
A clear, strong voice commanded from off to my right. Philip hauled me around with him as he turned to face the approaching man, who unnervingly had a very real gun drawn and pointed at us. 40-ish, with close-cropped brown hair, the newcomer bore a serious-as-all-hell expression, perfectly complemented by a dark suit. I had no clue who the hell he was, but I was pissed and scared and desperate. I thrashed and kicked back hard into Philip's shin.
Yeah, let me go!
Philip tightened his arm around me and looked to the left, where looming zombie had moved away with the tranquilized bad zombie slung over his shoulder, then dragged me backwards with him into the shadows.
No problem,
he snarled, and shoved me roughly forward. Totally off balance, I went sprawling to the sidewalk. The palm of my right hand grated against the concrete, and white-hot agony shot through me as my already broken wrist impacted and shattered.
Asshole!
I shouted as soon as I could get a full breath, though it came out as more of a pained wheeze. I shifted to sit heavily, cradling my arm to my chest, and caught a glimpse of Philip sprinting away before he was lost to the darkness. The man holstered his gun and moved toward me.
Miss Crawford, are you all right, ma'am?
The pain faded and my senses dulled as my parasite kicked in.
No, I'm not all right, I growled as I struggled to my feet. And goddammit, that motherfucker cut my jacket.
Yes, ma'am,
he said in a cool professional tone, no accent to speak of, and no edible brain scent. Yet another zombie.
What are your injuries?
I don't know, my wrist is broken.
I examined my jacket sleeve with dismay. I felt my lower lip quiver.
God damn it, I muttered. He could have at least cut the seam. What a dick.
I snapped my eyes to the man, abruptly wary. I'd discovered from Bad Zombie that knowing my name didn't instantly translate to friend.
And who the hell are you?
I asked. I took a step back, ready to bolt.
Brian Archer, ma'am. I work for Mr. Ivanov. He called to say you'd lured a zombie out the west exit.
The relief nearly dropped me to the ground again.
Oh, good.
Of course Pietro had some security people around. I'd told Jane to call Pietro, and he must have sent this dude. Brian reached into his jacket pocket, pulled out a white plastic tube thing that looked like a yogurt packet for kids, and held it out to me.
Here, you need this, Miss Crawford.
I frowned at the packet without reaching for it.
Why do I need that?
I glanced back over my shoulder toward the distant tent.
Crap, Marcus is gonna come looking for me.
And oh my God, would he ever freak the hell out about the fact that I went off on my own and then got in way over my head. I would never hear the end of it. Ever.
Ever.
You need it because your wrist is broken, Brian stated, still holding the packet. You need food.
I took the packet from him.
Oh, wait. This is Brian's?
Yes, ma'am. And you may need a second one.
Jeez, the ma'am thing was weird. I sure as hell wasn't used to it.
I tore the top of the packet open with one hand and my teeth. One sniff confirmed that it was indeed Brain's, and I sucked it down quickly as I cast another glance back toward the gala. Brian noticed.
I suspect he will be here very shortly, ma'am. Do you need another packet?
I shuddered as the wrist pulled back together in a familiar but still eerie as hell shift of tissue and bone.
Yeah, if you don't mind. And an alibi, I added with a snort.
He took the empty packet from me and tucked it away.
I don't mind at all, ma'am, he said, and pressed a second one into my hand.
I gave him a grateful smile, then sucked down the contents of the second one. Nipped